Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is a rebroadcast of The Brian Lehrer Show, so don't even think about calling in. But you can comment on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. To some of you, my first guest this hour is a hero, an internet guru, he's been called, and a copyright law activist in more prosaic terms. He is Lawrence Lessig. And he says he's written his final book on intellectual property in the digital age. He's decided to employ his loyal Netroots followers on a different mission to root out corruption in Congress. Lawrence Lessig joins me now in our studio. He is here from the Stanford Law School in California. He's founder of the school's Center for Internet and Society. He's in New York to talk about his new book, which is Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy, and his new cause to change Congress, to talk about that as well. Welcome back to WNYC, Lawrence Lessig.
Great to be here.
You've said that it really doesn't matter too much whether Mickey Mouse becomes public property, but if Congress gets it wrong on something like global warming, then we're really in a bad situation. So last year you announced that you were shifting gears primarily to work on political corruption and campaign finance reform in a project called Change Congress. Tell us about it.
Well, you're right. There was a certain point where I had this recognition, which made me recognize that I wasn't actually as smart as I thought I was, that the problems that we were facing in the context of copyright were caused by the very same things that were causing problems in much more fundamentally important areas like global warming. It was actually watching Al Gore give his talk a number of times where it struck me that the very same reasons why we were getting easy questions wrong in the context of copyright was why we were getting easy questions wrong in the context of global warming. And the reason for that was this improper influence or dependence on money in the process of congressmen getting elected. I don't think the problem is bribery or the problem is feathering the nest corruption. I think the problem is they just can't focus on the right questions because the right questions don't pay.
It's fascinating to make that connection because a lot of people might think, well, it's kind of interesting but relatively trivial to talk about whether you can use other people's music in your mashups. It's obviously of overwhelming importance to talk about whether we get global warming right, but you're saying these issues have the same root.
Exactly right, the same root. And the root is that too much of what Congress does gets driven by their sixth sense about how what they do affects their ability to raise money, as opposed to what the right answer to a particular question is.
And you've said that right now we have a unique opportunity that won't last long to take advantage of the uncertainty in Congress about how the internet actually works. So what do you mean by that? What's the uncertainty more precisely?
Well, one opportunity here is given by the fact that the way these technologies can actually empower people to be part of the political process is something that the traditional structures of power don't yet know how to manage well. So we have a chance to surprise people, and I think the Obama campaign demonstrated why a technology can surprise the establishment. The second opportunity, though, I think comes directly from the Obama campaign, and that is people, even people who didn't support Obama, I think have a sense now that there's an extraordinary opportunity to channel the energy from that campaign into something fundamental, sort of you could think of it as change version two, fundamental about the way government works. And that's something different from the particular substantive policies that Obama was pushing and much more about how we make sure government is focused on the right answers as opposed to the answers that give them the most dollars.
So change version two, change 2.0, if this is going to be a ground up movement, as Obama let a lot of, you know, grassroots networks bloom in support of him. Is this always going to be in support of him, or is this going to be sort of an independent group of Netroots watchdogs even on him?
Well, I think it's got to be independent of him. I mean, obviously, he's going to do a lot through his transition process and administration to bring people into the process of advising the administration, and that's good. But I think it needs an integrity and independence from any particular administration. It needs to take the inspiration from this campaign, but I think it needs to deliver a change which is actually much more bipartisan, much more fundamental than just the change that might be directed towards his particular campaign.
So very specifically, you're asking public officials to take a pledge promising four things: refuse PAC and lobbyist money, support public financing, vote to end earmarks, and increase congressional transparency. And from what I understand, neither one of our New York State U.S. senators have made the pledge. What kind of response are you getting, and where do you go from here?
Well, the important point first is to say that we're not actually saying which of these you've got to support. What we're saying is we want to start a conversation about what fundamental reform is. And one way to start the conversation is to say, just take a stand. Just tell us what you think about these four changes. Now, I personally would like people to take all four, but some people think it's the earmarks, which is the problem. Some people think public funding of public campaigns is the real issue. But once we get people to take a stand, then we want to facilitate a debate about whether this, you know, the ones that are most popular are the ones that we actually need to implement. Now, we started by asking every congressman and every candidate to take a stand. And something like 15% of the candidates took a stand. And right now we have 7 members of Congress have actually taken a stand. But what we're doing in the second round is we're actually using this kind of wiki workforce to go out there and to pester members, to get them to actually just take a stand about where they stand on these issues so that we can see where reform is.
And taking it one step further, of course, you have a lot of devoted followers in the Netroots communities, and you're using a wiki now to track corruption. What are you asking the public to do? How can people contribute to this wiki?
Well, the first thing they should do is help us get people to take the stand, so to pester people to come clean about where they stand on these issues. And once we've got this map of where Congress is on these issues, then we're going to ask people to help us keep members committed to the positions that they have taken a stand on. So if they supported public funding, then let's say them support public funding bills when they come up for votes. And if they don't, we want to say, see, you said you were supporting this, but in fact you haven't supported in your voting. So it's establishing a set of core transformative issues and then holding them accountable when they don't actually deliver.
And in the spirit of investigative crowdsourcing, something we're also very interested in on this show, you ask the public to do some sleuthing about their elected officials and their record on government transparency. Is the goal just to expose these records, or what kind of sleuthing do you want your users to do?
Well, when a member doesn't actually take a stand on his or her own, what we want people, wiki source crowdsourcing to do is to go out and look at his or her speeches or writings and see where they are on a particular issue. So they might be in favor of fundamental reform of earmarks, or they might be in favor of public funding, but they actually haven't signed up to a pledge. So if they're in favor, we want you to help us identify that so that we can begin to make sure that we know where everybody is. And once we know where everybody is, then we can start applying the pressure necessary to get real change.
We can take some phone calls and web comments for Lawrence Lessig. His new book is called Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy. But we haven't been talking about the book so far. We've been talking about his even newer push to change Congress through investigative crowdsourcing, through the use of wikis and things like that, very consistent with Lawrence Lessig's history of populist use of new media. So give us a call if you want to talk to Lawrence Lessig, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see the Copyright Wars page to write something to Lawrence Lessig here this morning, or 212-433-9692. Now, in the book, you say, even the good become pirates in a world where the rules seem absurd. And you're referring to copyright law. Talk about it.
Well, right now we're in the middle of a war. Actually, in America, we're in the middle of a number of wars. But this one is the copyright wars, wars which my friend, the late Jack Valenti, referred to as his own, quote, terrorist war, end quote, where apparently the terrorists are our children. This war has been waged for a decade. The thing we need to recognize is the war has been an utter failure. There's not a reduction in the amount of peer-to-peer file sharing going on. There's more peer-to-peer file sharing going on. And as we have waged this war, peer-to-peer file sharing has not increased the amount of money artists have had. It's not made businesses more possible to build in this context. So those objectives of copyright have not been achieved. But most important to me is actually something that was very important to Jack Valenti. In this last decade, what we've done is criminalize a generation of our kids who have grown up doing what seems normal to them, natural to them, given the technology, but which we tell them renders them a criminal. And that, I think, is corrosive.
Meaning downloading free music or video and messing around with it for their own creative projects.
Right. Now, peer-to-peer file sharing is used largely for the objective of getting access to content, some of which is copyrighted and restricted, some of which is accessible under the copyright rules. But another part of what they do is they then take this work and remix it. Now, I was just in Hong Kong 2 weeks ago, and in Hong Kong I was introduced to a kid who had a friend who took a song, connected it to a video, uploaded it to his website. He was criminally prosecuted for this act, even though he was not selling anything, he was not engaging in anything other than this creative remix of this content. But under Chinese law, as the United States government has insisted it be adapted, this activity was a criminal activity, and this is being prosecuted so that, as the government says, it sets a lesson for other people. But what is the lesson the Chinese government is trying to teach? That we shouldn't be encouraging kids to be creative and express their ideas using this technology? It seems to me exactly the wrong message that we should be teaching to the next generation.
But, of course, the film, TV, and music industries are very vigilant about protecting what they see as their and their artists' intellectual property. And there's a fine line between sampling and copying, right?
There is. And I think it's important for them to be able to prosper in a copyright environment. But we need the rules that are properly adapted to the technology. So once we've waged a war for 10 years against peer-to-peer file sharing and we have failed, it's time for us to stop suing kids and start suing for peace and adapt a different system of copyright to deal with this problem. Now, this is not just a radical professor arguing this position. Just last week, Judge Patel, who was the judge who oversaw the Napster case, the very first case that took on this new peer-to-peer generation, came out with a very fundamental proposal for reform of the copyright system, establishing something like a collective license for all of this peer-to-peer file sharing. So when a respected judge like Judge Patel can come forward and say it's time to cease this war and radically change the way we regulate this space, I think it's time for Congress to wake up to the fact as well.
Edna in Manhattan. You're on WNYC with Lawrence Lessig.
What I want to know, Mr. Obama opted out of public financing. He raised a lot of money where we don't know where it came from. Does he think he bought the White House?
What do you think? Because you're obviously a proponent of public financing.
Well, I was disappointed when Barack Obama turned down public financing. I know why he did it. I understand why he did it, but I was disappointed because I think it's going to make it harder to support public financing going forward. Obviously, he raised an enormous amount of money from small contributions, but he also raised a lot of money through bundling of large contributions or bundlers pulling together a large amount of money. And that raises exactly the question that is at the core of the problem with political funding right now. We are skeptical. We don't quite understand why the congressman or why the president or why the senator did what he or she did when we know that there's money on the table that supports why he did or she did what he or she did. So that's the objective of public funding, to break that link so that when a congressperson does something which is contrary to the interest of the district, we don't think, well, maybe they did this because of money. We think, well, maybe they did this because they had a better view of the matter or they thought more about it or the arguments on the other side were more in support. I mean, there's a very particular example with Senator Clinton that I think reveals this. When she was in the White House as First Lady Clinton, she was responsible for stopping what became the Bankruptcy and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, a terrible bill which basically made it impossible to escape credit card debt. She stopped that bill, what she called that awful bill, by getting Bill Clinton to basically pocket veto it at the end of his administration. When she became Senator Clinton, she voted for the bill twice after $140,000 was given to her by finance interests in credit card companies in the campaigns. Now, people look at that and say, well, she was bought. Now, I don't believe she was bought. I don't think Hillary Clinton is the sort of person who could be bought in this kind of circumstance. But the point is, everybody's got to recognize that even someone like Hillary Clinton gets questioned or second-guessed when the system depends upon this private funding. We don't want to listen to her actual reasons for the shift that she made, and then she flipped back in 2005 and voted against it. We just assume we know why she did it. And that's what's so corrupting about this process. We become disengaged because we don't believe the reasons they give. We don't want to listen to their reasons. We just want to sit back and be as cynical as most of us are about the political system.
Nancy in Irvington. You're on WNYC with Lawrence Lessig. Hello.
Hi. My comment has to do with the idea of taking a pledge, and I cannot tell you how much I support the idea of transparency and all the goals to which Mr. Lessig is trying to put forth. But there are two things that come to mind. The first has to do with the Internet. It's the way that kids on Facebook, adolescents, how they have to put relationship status down, or don't have to, but that so often when you have to put in writing, when you have to pledge, here's where I am exactly, well, sometimes things are sort of fluid in relationships. And when you put it by kind of saying this is where I am, well, that changes things. And I know that relationships are different.
So are you saying that
policy,
that politicians should have should not be judged too harshly if they change their mind under changing circumstances?
I think that you have to allow for changing circumstances, because when he was talking about they have to take the pledge and we have to put their feet to the fire, I thought about Catch-22 and McCarthyism and how everybody has to take the pledge, and it just kind of stopped me cold.
Yeah. Well, Lawrence Lessig, what about that?
Well, I certainly don't think all pledges are good, and I certainly don't think we should force people to take positions which they're uncertain of or which are subject to change. But I do think it's time that Congress commit to some basic changes that would actually restore trust in the institution. This is the fundamental bankruptcy of this institution. In July and August, Rasmussen reported that 9% of the American public thought Congress was doing a good or an excellent job. That's fewer people supporting Congress than supported the British Crown at the time of the Revolution. This is a completely bankrupt institution from the standpoint of us believing in it anymore. Now, in the face of bankruptcy, I think it's time for some extraordinary measures so that Congress can begin to restore trust in that institution. And I think standing clear and solidly on the side of steps that would assure transparency and would assure a destruction of the dependency on private money would be a good first step. But if there are other ways to do it, I'd be happy to listen to it. Again, Change Congress wants to facilitate that conversation. We don't want to demand any particular set of changes, but what we do want to demand that it's time to focus on how to change this system to restore that trust.
My guest on WNYC for another few minutes is Stanford law professor and founder of the school's Center for Internet and Society, Lawrence Lessig. His latest book is Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy. But we're also talking about his latest initiative, which is to try to change Congress, in part by using investigative crowdsourcing, putting many of you to work to find out how your elected representatives in Washington stand on certain key issues to our democracy that he's been laying out, and to try to use a group online project that he's created to hold their feet to the fire. How can people actually participate in this?
So if you go to the website change-congress.org, you can participate by helping us with what's called the iPledge Project, where what you'll do is you locate your local congressperson, your senators, and you either write them or you email them, or we give you a little way to call them to say to them, you've got to take a stand. You've got to at least tell us what you think about these issues, because these issues are important. They're important to Democrats. They're important to Republicans. This is not a partisan move. It's about a bipartisan move to get Congress to reform itself. And this is the first step to do it. So I would really be grateful if people would participate in this process of saying to Congress, it's time you take a stand about this issue.
All right. That's the kind of thing Brian Lehrer Show listeners love to do. So get out there to change-congress.org for Lawrence Lessig's project. Comment from our webpage. Someone asks, can you ask Lessig to comment on the idea and Supreme Court rulings that money is equivalent to free speech, that is campaign spending money, is equivalent to free speech, and how that relates to his objectives?
Well, nothing that we're calling for in the Change Congress movement would question that basic Supreme Court doctrine that was announced in the case of Buckley versus Vallejo. We're worried about the way that doctrine is being developed. It may actually be developed in a way that forbids any campaign funding, public funding, and that, of course, would be terrible. But the basic principle behind Buckley is not a bad one. What it says is it's okay to regulate where there's a question about corruption. So limiting campaign contributions is a way to make sure that we don't think there's an implicit quid pro quo going on. But what the government can't do is stop people from speaking. So it can't stop people from speaking independent of a political campaign. That's an important free speech value, and I support that idea. But I do think that we need to be creative in making sure that the political process doesn't produce a result where we believe the system has been bought. 88% of the people in my district believe Congress decides things because of the money. And that is a deeply corrosive view that most people now hold.
We have two great guests yet to come this hour after we finish up with Lawrence Lessig. Virginia Heffernan from the New York Times will talk about this movement. It's I think, in the Lawrence Lessig spirit of moms who carry babies in front packs being so insulted by a Motrin commercial the other day that they actually used Twitter to squelch this commercial from airing. We'll get the details. But Lawrence Lessig, before you go, you're frustrated, you say, with your work in intellectual property, which is why you're moving on to try to change Congress. But are you too modest? I mean, more than 90 million works are now licensed under the Creative Commons, which is the alternative licensing system that you created. So have you accomplished something?
Well, I'm frustrated with the problems that Congress faces. I'm not frustrated with what we call the free culture movement. In fact, you know, my books are typically very pessimistic. And one of the problems is it's hard for me to write a pessimistic book about this subject anymore because I think we're actually going to win this debate. It's going to take 5 or 10 years before Congress wakes up or the administration wakes up to these issues. But people, teachers, librarians, parents are increasingly recognizing why this is a crazy, insane war to be waging. And they're beginning to make their voices heard. But the fundamental issue that made it so hard in the copyright debate, this corruption, I think is an immensely impossible problem to attack. And so I can write very pessimistic books about that, and that's what I'm working on right now.
We have a few callers calling in on the same question, so I'm going to sneak one in here. We have to do this quick. But Kirk in Brooklyn, you're on with Lawrence Lessig. Hi.
Hi, yeah. I was calling. My question is regarding increased involvement of the citizens in the government and whether or not I'm not sure if you're aware of sunlightfoundation.com, but they're doing similar things. But whether it would be viable at some point in the future for normal citizens to be somehow a part of the legislative branch and have a vote on bills or something like that.
So I'm a big supporter of Sunlight Foundation. They're also a supporter of Change Congress. They're main focus is transparency, and they want people to be more involved in the process of ferreting out exactly what the relationships are and exactly what Congress is doing.
And Sunlight Foundation, by the way, is Andrew Roche, who was here last week, for those of you who remember that interview. Go ahead.
Right. But I've got to say that I actually believe in representative democracy. I think representatives need to be in the position of making decisions about what's good and what's bad in government. Coming from California, where we have an endless series of insane and totally incomprehensible ballot initiatives, which confuse voters and voters never pay sufficient attention to, I think that that's why we hire representatives. And we ought to just say to them, do your job in a way we can trust and we can believe in. And that would be good democratic government.
And final thing, you endorsed Barack Obama for president, and he has promised to create a cabinet post called Chief Technology Officer. That's what we were talking to Andrew Roche about last week. Your name has been mentioned as somebody who'd be great for that position. Would you like to be considered?
Oh, I shouldn't be considered. I think this is a job for a true geek. I'm just a geek wannabe. So I think there are important technology policy questions, which, of course, I and many others would love to participate in helping the administration think through. But the CTO has got to be somebody who's actually wired together servers and understands the way that technology functions. And there are a lot of great people out there who they're considering, and I would support any number of these top candidates.
So back for you to the Center for Geek Wannabes and Society. I mean, the Center for Internet and Society at the Stanford University Law School. Lawrence Lessig, his new book is Remix, Making Art and Commerce Thrive in the Hybrid Economy. Always great to have you on the show. Glad we were able to get you in our studio being in New York today.
Great to be back. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, those Motrin moms use Twitter to rebel against the TV commercial. Stay tuned.